You're listening to The Tales We Tell, a podcast about spooky stories, unsolved mysteries, and local lore. I'm your host, Hannah Parch.
And I'm Katie.
Happy anniversary!
Happy anniversary!
I'm so excited.
Welcome back, Katie and listeners.
Gentle listeners.
Don't be so gentle. Let's party, y'all.
You know, it's our 1 year anniversary today. We're very excited. We have some champagne. We have some cake. We have reserve cupcakes in the fridge. Bad timing. We also have another bottle of wine. We've got a lot of stuff going on.
We are ready to celebrate.
We are. So first order of business, first thing to celebrate, our big announcement for today is that we're finally launching a Patreon.
Woo woo!
I'm so excited. It finally feels official after a year. Katie can't celebrate too hard.
At least not with my right arm. Y'all, I'm 50% vaccinated.
Holla!
More things to celebrate.
Which means according to the CDC, we are almost technically allowed to be doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
Which is hanging out in the same room without masks on.
It'll be slightly less fun when I'm fully vaccinated, though, because then we won't be breaking the rules.
Yeah, that's
true. You know I love being a rebel.
Well, we'll just drive over here with an open container or something and...
I haven't done that already? Just kidding. I do not drink and drive. I do condone drinking and driving.
And if we have open containers, they are in the back seat and they are simply for transportation purposes.
Absolutely. It's bringing home a half-drunk bottle of wine.
Yes.
Anyway. A Patreon, you say?
Patreon, yes. So, the way we decided to do it is we only have two tiers right now. A $5 a month and a $10 a month. What you get with $5 is you get a shout-out on the podcast. Our undying love.
Support and gratitude.
Yes. You're going to get our original Tales We Tell stickers. And with the stickers, you will get a handwritten note, obviously. And then, as more sticker designs come out, you will also get a sampling of the new sticker designs as they become available. For $10 a month, if you love us that much, you will get all of the above, plus you'll get early access to our episodes. You'll get them a whole day early, and you will get any bonus content that we are able to put out. I know in the past we've said that the reason we weren't doing Patreon is because we didn't feel like we had enough bonus content. So this way, when we do have it, it'll be available to our big patrons.
So I'm stepping up a little bit in my responsibilities. You know, I've spent a year just coasting, sitting here and listening and drinking wine and being incredulous at some of the things that Hannah tells me. You know, with a little bit of a tell-we-tale every now and then. Yeah. There's a few peppered in. But we have a special treat coming out this Friday.
Yes.
And that's some of the bonus content that we are hopefully going to be providing or will be providing for our patrons.
Yes.
And, you know, it'll be a little sporadic at first, but we're planning on making that more of a regular, you know, bonus content thing.
Yes.
Also, for any listeners who may not know what Patreon is.
Oh, yeah.
Patreon is basically your way of being a patron of the arts. It's supporting artists, makers, creators. And, you know, we've been doing this for a year now. We make negative dollars.
Negative money.
We spend money to do this.
We do.
So even a one-time donation of any amount is also an option. You don't have to be a monthly subscriber or a monthly patron. And that is greatly, greatly appreciated.
Yes.
Anything helps. Like, we're happy to take $1.
We are. And I was going to say, if neither of the tier prices work for you, there is an option that you can just pick your own price. And then the way to do a $1 donation, if you want, you do have to kind of, like, sign up like you're going to do it. But then as soon as you donate, you can just cancel it. I tried to find a loophole in the... I was texting Katie, like, I was spamming her phone yesterday as I was figuring it out. And I was like, should we just put a link to a PayPal account or something? And I was like, that feels icky. So I Googled it. A little shady. Yeah. So if you do want to just make a one-time, just know it. You'll have to kind of sign up like a Patreon.
You're smart. You can figure it out.
Yeah. You guys are all tech savvy. I also just wanted to give a quick note on where that money's going to go. Like Katie said, we pay to make this podcast. The three main things we're paying for, Buzzsprout is the site that hosts our podcast. It allows us to upload a certain amount of hours. It gives us an RSS feed. It is what sends our podcast to platforms like Apple, Spotify, Google.
Wherever you're listening now.
Exactly. That is a service you have to pay for, so that's a monthly thing we're paying. Weave is the website we use to make our previews, the fun little
snippets the day before.
You also have to pay for that.
And then our website.
Actual website.
Got to pay for that.
Everything you have to pay for. And then obviously the equipment. We have talked a lot about wanting to upgrade our equipment eventually. So all the money that is going to come into Patreon will...
That's what it goes to.
It goes back into the podcast.
Yeah.
So obviously I think we would both love, or I would love to quit my job and only do this. That's not where that money's coming from. So just rest assured, if you do want to donate, number one, we will love you forever. And number two,
if you don't donate, we will still love you forever because you're listening, you're supporting us. Like, we understand not everyone can financially support.
Yes.
And, you know, we got into this knowing it would cost us money. So
this is true. And we've done it for a year and we're still here. So
we're going to do it for another year.
Yeah.
And then another one. And another.
Hey, I was going to say it's been through three. It's been through two houses because we started it right when we got our, shortly after we got our old house that turned out to be a nightmare. A tale in itself. okay, so this week for our special 1 year anniversary, I wanted to do something in honor of Women's Herstory Month, as I like to call the month of March.
Excellent.
So
cheers to that, darling.
Because, you know, we're two women.
Strong, independent women.
Strong, independent women.
We don't need a man to open up our champagne bottles.
We don't.
But we like to let them do it anyway.
And we appreciate that he also edits this podcast.
Don't worry, we brought champagne for him, too.
We did, yeah. He's in the living room with his champagne.
And he might be eating a cupcake, too. Who knows?
Probably. I will be after you leave, if I keep on. Or I'll just eat the rest of the cake. You know, I thought, Katie, we talk a lot about a lot of men on the show, you know, and I thought it was time that we give women the same amount of attention that we give these men.
Hey, so instead of bad guys doing bad things, we're going to talk about bad girls doing bad things?
Hell yeah, we are!
I'm here for it. It's like they say, well-behaved women rarely make history.
Exactly. So I had actually never heard of any of the women we're going to talk about. But I'm going to tell you about three. Each of them, number one, because this is the tales we tell, has a particularly grisly element to it. And also, each of these women is prolific in her own criminal way. So
I wonder if I know one of them.
Well, I started out with four. Okay, here's a fun thing. If you Google one of them, Google just, like, is like, do you want to know about this one? What about this one? Have you heard of this one? It gives you, like, a list of, like, women serial killers, basically. And I went on a big rabbit hole, and I narrowed it down to four, and then I started doing this research, and I was like, this is going to take forever if I do four. So I cut it to three. The first one is kind of a local lore, if you will. It's not lore, it's an actual story. This is Frances Frankie Stewart Silver, who was the first white woman executed in Burke County, North Carolina.
Well, all right then.
Here we go. So Frankie, as she was known, she was born in 1814 to parents Isaiah and Barbara Stewart, and she lived in Burke County, North Carolina, which is I had to look it up. It's south of Boone and, like, northeast of Asheville.
Hill country.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a description given by her brother-in-law. And he's just got away with words.
Oh, my.
Quote.
Never champagne again.
I know. Quote. A mighty likely little woman. She had fair skin, bright eyes, and was counted very pretty. Honestly, same. I mean, just the fair skin part.
And bright eyes.
And bright eyes.
And very pretty.
Thank you. Okay. Quote. She had charms. I'm sorry. The punctuation in this is crazy. She had charms. I never saw a smarter little woman. She could card and spin her 3 yards of cotton a day on a big wheel. So there you go.
Hey, I started spinning, but no, I don't have a wheel. It's a drop spindle.
Could you card and spin 3 yards of cotton?
Well, I don't have a card, so no.
I don't
know. Or a carder. I don't know what the...
I don't know what any of that means.
Full proper terminology is.
Well,
it's basically how you brush out the fibers. So you get them all in a line so mm-hmm. that when you spin, they...
Oh, that's smart.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, Frankie was good at that, apparently.
Can she come and teach me?
No.
Like her ghost?
I was going to say, I started by saying she was executed.
Well, also, she was born in the 1800s, so executed or not, she did.
True. So she was only 17 when she married 19-year-old Charlie Silver. And this is the description of Charlie, also from... his brother, so Frankie's brother-in-law, he said, quote, strong and healthy, good-looking, and agreeable. He had lots of friends. Everybody liked him. He was a favorite at all the parties, for he could make merry by talking, laughing, and playing musical instruments. I think he was the best fifer I ever heard.
Well, clearly he never met Michelle.
Well... I was like, who's Michelle, and why does she play the fife?
She is the fife.
She is the fifer. Okay, so they married and they settled into their own little cabin in Mitchell County, which is like basically the same area. It's all hill country. On December 22nd, 1831, something happened in their little cabin. Some people have speculated that Charlie was unfaithful to Frankie or that she believed he was unfaithful to her. Oh. However, family historian Wayne Silver thinks it was likely that Charlie came home from buying some liquor for Christmas, as you do, and that as he was coming home, he was sampling his purchase, and he was a little inebriated when he came home. And
well, I mean, that's what happens if you only drink at Christmas. You're a total lightweight, so like, even just a sampling on the way home, that'll get you there.
Well, Frankie was home. They had I think she was like a 13-month-old baby. So Frankie's home with a baby, probably by herself, probably been doing a lot of stuff all day, is tired, has been waiting on Charlie to come home, and he comes home buzzed, and she's like...
Not having
just,
this.
Oh, I can feel her frustration so hard right now. So he thinks maybe Frankie picked a fight or something started an argument. Charlie perhaps threatened Frankie or their baby, and Frankie, being the strong, independent woman she was, took matters into her own hand, took the axe that they had,
mm-hmm.
and chopped Charlie to a point where he was dead.
As one does.
So, either way, Frankie now finds herself with a axed husband, and she does what any 18-year-old in this situation would do, and she goes to her mother freaking out. So she goes to Barbara and also her brother, whose name is Blackston, which there are a lot of strong names in this episode, and that's one of them.
Does her mother say Frankie say relax?
No. Well, maybe. So it's unclear whether or not Barbara and Blackston helped like physically with this disposal of the body or if they just gave her advice. But
as one does.
As one does. But so Frankie's initial idea.
Hill country, there's probably some farming. Go find some pigs.
Oh, well, they didn't do that. What they thought first was, well, we'll just burn it in the fireplace. Turns out that's way harder to do than you would think, I guess.
Oh, that would be so messy, too, because, like, trying to fit an entire body into a fireplace.
Also, you're just going to smoke yourself out of the house.
Yes. Oh, and it's going to smell terrible, because burning flesh smells awful.
How do you know that, Katie?
I used to work at a veterinary hospital.
Oh, stop. Okay, nope. No, no, no. I don't like your stories anymore. I don't like your anecdotes.
They might want to know.
Oh.
A dog had to have its leg removed.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought you were going in a different direction.
No. The dog needed a surgical procedure to remove his leg and turn him into the ever-endearing three-legged dog.
Or the one-legged dog, Little Bretter.
And so the dog is under and totally fine, okay. And it was totally fine after the surgery. But the they use a laser knife.
Mm-hmm.
Because it helps kind of, like, sear and cauterize the skin, and it will cut down on a bunch
like
of bleeding.
Like a lightsaber.
And, yeah. And also just kind of helps with closing it up. So, anyway, basically, that's how I know the smell of burning flesh, because of that laser.
Based on your last anecdote that gave me nightmares, I was thinking you were going in a different direction having to do with a crematorium, and I was not here for that.
Not everything is all, like, doom and gloom with me. Just most things.
Just most things. Oh, well, I'm not over last week. Okay, so Frankie has his body, so she takes the axe that she used to kill.
According to her brother-in-law, it's a pretty nice body, too.
I know, right?
Whether it's hers or his that he's talking about.
Strong and healthy.
Yeah.
So she cuts up the body into more manageable pieces, and I guess she just, she tries to burn some of them, she tries to hide some of them. What investigators eventually find when they look into this is, okay, I'm going to say this phrase once and then never again because I think it's disgusting. Quote, oily ashes in the fireplace.
That would be the adipose tissue or fat.
Gross. I don't need to know that.
Well, that's why it's the fat being rendered down. That's probably what was causing that oily appearance.
Gross. Okay.
That would be my best guess, but I don't work in a crematorium. I've never been to a crematorium. I've never burned an actual human body before.
Hmm. Katie just winked when she said that.
Katie did not wink.
She did wink. They also find a pool of blood that had collected under the floorboards.
You keep trying to throw me under the bus. I'm going to send the FBI a copy of your internet search history.
Oh, no! Don't do that. I'm going to unblock your husband's name. Which is honestly, in my phone, it's just Mr. and then what I have your name in there is. They also find blood splatter inside the cabin, which given that this was the 1830s, I'm imagining, because they didn't have Luminol, I'm imagining it was very obvious blood spray.
She's probably a little busy with body disposal to, like, clean the walls stuff.
For sure. We've all been there. They find pieces of bone and flesh in some ashes that had been poured into a mortar hole nearby. They also found body parts hidden under the floorboards, buried in the yard, and hidden in a nearby stump.
It seems very disorganized to me.
Very disorganized.
It was like she was trying all these different things. So clearly a first-timer.
Yeah. They also said that Charlie's head and torso were found somewhere outside the cabin. I'm presuming that they were not attached to each other, otherwise it maybe would have been just his torso.
Well, I don't know. They could be attached.
Head and torso. Well, yeah, I guess your head. All right.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, everyone. I speculated there.
Well, it's like, you know, like the head and torso portion of the body was outside while all the limbs were here, there,
she, like,
yawn.
Got real tired doing the bottom half, and then she was like,
how am I gonna cut through all of this?
I'll just put it in a stump for now. I'll get back to it.
Probably didn't want to look at it either.
Ooh, yeah.
And also, you know, like, the torso, that's where all, like, the gases build up, too. Mm. And so, like, the smell and the mess, so.
Also, she had a baby in the house. She had to get that out of there.
At least you said this was, like, Christmas time?
Yes.
So at least it was cold. So, you know, there was a little bit of, like, preservation there. At least there wasn't, like, the North Carolina heat and humidity helping with decomposition, so.
Katie, your foreshadowing is impeccable. I can't even believe it. Okay, so on January 9th of 1832, Frankie, her mother Barbara, and her brother Blackston were all arrested for the murder of Charlie Silver. So, basically, she tried to say, he just didn't come home. He went out hunting on Christmas and he didn't come home. And people got suspicious and then they started snooping around and found her poorly hidden body. Or his poorly hidden body. So, on March 17th of 1832, which is 189 years ago today, nothing super significant happened, but charges were dropped against Barbara and Blackston, and Frankie had to stand trial for the murder alone.
I wonder if they originally thought that Blackston did it because, you know, woman couldn't murder someone, right? Like, a woman,
that's true,
not strong enough to axe murder her
and
husband.
Then they probably saw how poorly it was hidden and they were like, oh, it was a woman.
Well, also, it was so messy, and women are just supposed to cook and clean and care for the chitlins.
This is true. This is
so
true.
Also, it was so messy, you know, like, guy would do
Blackston. What a great name. I'm here for that name. Blackston Stewart? Ugh. I bet he had a strong jawline. okay. So, Isaiah, her father, and her attorney both agreed that she was going to plead not guilty rather than plead, like, self-defense. I don't know why. That didn't work. And on March 30th, she was found guilty in the murder of her husband and sentenced to death. However, between her sentencing and her actual execution date, there was just a lot of hang-ups, like legalities, appeals.
I was about to ask if there was appeals.
Yeah.
Did they try a different legal tactic with any of the appeals, like self-defense?
I don't think so. I know that there was a lot of, there ended up being a ton of public support for her. And so, like, by the end of this, I think there were, like, letters asking the governor to pardon her. But then there was something about, like, the judge a new judge had to be elected, and, like, the governor changed, and all sorts of stuff.
Hmm.
So, it ends up being almost a year later, on May 18th of 1833, and Isaiah and Blackston are like, this is taking too long. So, they go, and they break Frankie out of jail. And because there was so much public support, everyone thinks that they had some inside help. So
it could also just be it was the 1830s, and they probably didn't have a
all you had to do was, like,
Cracker Jack security system.
Yeah, like, create a small diversion to distract the one guard and then just, like, take his keys. Or they probably had, like a bloodhound guarding the jail, and you just had to, like, hold a bone through the, you know, and get him to come over with the keys.
Or just, you know, bring some bolt cutter kind of things and break her off the chain gang.
There you go. Exactly. So they allegedly cut her hair super short and disguised her as a man. And this is my favorite part of the whole story. This is according to Wikipedia. I didn't find this in other sources, but allegedly they were traveling with Frankie in disguise. Like, she was, like, walking next to this cart, and they were just acting like regular travelers. And they were stopped at some point, and someone called out to Frankie by name. Like, they suspected her. And she replied, quote, I thank you, sir, but my name is Tommy. And she, like, disguised her voice and, you know, playing the part. And apparently her uncle was there traveling with them, and he goes, yeah, her name's Tommy.
Oh, no.
And that's how she got caught. Allegedly.
Because her uncle's an idiot.
Yeah. So they get caught. Frankie is recaptured. It's like several days after her escape. They were either in Henderson County or Rutherford County.
So they were heading over to Tennessee, I guess.
Yeah. And they were, both of those are like super close to South Carolina. So they were going like south, west.
Yeah, Henderson's like right over the big mountain range before you get to Tennessee.
There you go.
think it's the Green River Gorge.
I'm glad you knew that, because I had to Google all these things. I don't know Western North Carolina very well.
I love the mountains.
So on July 12th of 1833, she has been brought back to Morganton, North Carolina, in Burke County. She was hung outside the courthouse. Her father was there. He had a coffin ready to bring her back home.
I believe it's hanged.
Oh, well, I'm going to say it wrong a bunch. So he had this coffin ready to bring her home. Unfortunately, it is the middle of July in North Carolina, and the heat and humidity caused her body to decompose at a rapid rate, and he was forced to bury her just 8 miles outside of the town instead of bringing her home, which I do think is
very sad.
And then, like I said at the beginning, I will say the article that I read on BlueRidgeCountry.com disputes this. They said that this was not necessarily true. But she is named in several other sources as the first white woman to be hung in Burke County. That article said she was not the first woman hung, but I think if you just say she's the first white woman hung...
We all know what you mean.
Yeah. Also, there's another one that's like that, and I will just say I'm just assuming that minority women were treated horribly and executed in the same manner before these people.
And with probably a lot less pomp and circumstance.
Yes.
Exactly. Also, there's probably less statistics on that as well.
Yeah.
They probably just didn't care to keep much records of it.
Especially, like, Hill Country, 1830s. Blech. Not our best time. So that's the story of Frankie Silver, the first white woman executed in Burke County, North Carolina.
Actually, I mean, obviously Hill County's not great, or Hill Country's not great, but it's not as bad as, like, plantation land.
This is true.
Or bigger cities and stuff.
Yeah. There's just lots of moonshiners.
Yeah. Just hill folk doing their hill people stuff.
Exactly. All right, can I have some wine for this next one?
Absolutely.
Great.
Let me finish my champagne.
Yeah, get on it. Cake break. Now that might be. All right, now that we have our wine and we've shoved some more cake in our mouths, the next woman I'm going to tell you about is Amelia Dyer.
Ooh, I think I know that name.
I'm going to show you a picture of her.
You already kind of did.
What?
You had your phone sitting there.
Oh.
And I was about to say, like, well, I can already tell from the photo that you've inadvertently shown me.
Yes.
This is not who I think you're going to tell me about. But
yes.
She does not look familiar. I mean, she does in the way of, like, an old, like, black and white grainy photo of a grumpy woman.
Yes.
Looks familiar, but her name sounds familiar.
Well, I'm going to tell you better.
Tell me about
She
it.
Was one of the most prolific serial killers in the history of ever. She was born in 18...
You'd never suspect her.
Actually, she was actually, like, a lot of people suspected her of what she did.
Probably.
So she was born in 1836, which is just 3 years after our last story left off. But she was British. She was born in Pile Marsh, Bristol, England.
Oh my gosh, is she somebody that, is she the person that Sweeney Todd is based off of? Did she
no.
turn her her victims into meat pies, the worst pies in London?
No, she did not. She...
I guess that's a relief.
yeah, what she did is definitely not as bad as that.
Well, I mean, there's serial murder, and then there's serial murder and forced cannibalism.
Forced cannibalism, that's true. But that one you can make, like, a fun musical out of. This one, I'll tell you about her victims in a minute. So, when she was young, her mother suffered from typhus, which I learned can sometimes cause mental deterioration, which it did. I also looked up the different kinds of typhus. This was likely scrub typhus, which you get from chiggers or mites that are infected with it biting you, which...
Oh, man.
In case you weren't already, like, itchy and squirmy, think of that.
I just think back to all the times I got chiggers as a kid. I'm so glad I never ended up with the typhus.
Right? So Amelia had to take care of her mother as her mental state deteriorated, and she eventually died in 1848. And Amelia was only 12 when that happened. So, traumatic childhood.
I got her beat.
Yeah.
By 2 years.
So she eventually grew up, and she met and married a man named George Thomas, who was 59 at the time. And both she and George...
So daddy issues.
Yes. They both lied about their ages on their marriage certificate. She made herself older, and he made himself younger, yeah. So that the age gap wasn't, like, dramatic.
I'm pretty sure it still was
a little dramatic. So while she's married to George, she trains as a nurse. And it's during this time that she learns about the practice of baby farming. Are you familiar with baby farming?
I am not, but I have a feeling it's something about, taking advantage of maybe young women who are in trouble, and basically saying, we'll buy your baby to sell to some other family.
Close. It's definitely not like picking babies out of the cabbage patch like I first assumed it was. It is the first part of what you said. So
didn't even think about Cabbage Patch Kids. I never had one, so.
I was just thinking of, like, I was thinking of the thing from Harry Potter.
Mandrakes.
Yeah. I was like, hey, you just pull babies out of the ground, you're baby farming.
I was thinking something a little bit more sci-fi and sinister-y, kind of like Matrix level.
Well, you're closer. So it was the practice of, quote-unquote, adopting illegitimate children. You're basically, I'm saying the reverse. You're not buying them. Someone is paying you to take them. Mm. And then the baby farmer, theoretically raises the child or takes care of the child until the mother is able to take care of them again. So they're not selling them.
So a semi-well-to-do family's daughter is with child, yes. And they're like, we need to get rid of this baby until she's married off.
Yes.
And then maybe when she's married off,
be like, she has a four-year-old, suddenly.
Like, this is her niece.
Yeah.
That you got her cousin can't take care of anymore, so she's going to come live with you.
Everyone knows in that situation, you let her have the baby, you tell the baby that the mom is the sister and that the grandma's the mom, and yep. Just go from there. You know, like Ted Bundy's mom did. So sometimes these mothers, these unwed mothers, would pay like a regular monthly fee. Sometimes they would just pay one lump sum up front. Fun fact, the 1834 Poor Law Amendment Act released fathers of illegitimate children from any financial obligation to the child or the mother.
Huh. I don't know how that got passed unless there was like an all-male legislature or something.
That's weird.
I feel like that's the only situation in which that could get passed.
I don't know how it got passed. It's like men ran the country back then or something.
Weird.
Or the world.
It's like they thought this was a man's world. It's like they still think it's a man's world. It's not.
It's like men are to blame for baby farming. That's how I read that. The patriarchy's to blame. So prices for babies varied depending on the circumstances. Generally, they ran about 5 pounds, but they could run as high as 80 pounds if it was like the family you were talking about, like the well-to-do family. I like to do conversions, and I'm bad at them, so I picked one site to use for all of them. It's called measuringworth.com, so everyone go double-check me. So, according to them, 5 pounds in 1860, which I'm just kind of guesstimating on a year here, is the equivalent of about 473 pounds in 2021 money. Which then we have to convert into U.S. dollars because Americans be expecting everything to be for us.
Yep.
So that is about $659. So about $650, you could give your baby to someone to take care of. And just for funsies, if you were a well-to-do family and you had to pay £80, that is the equivalent of about £7,500, which is about $10,545. So, yeah, if you have $10,500,
and I guess that's the lump sum.
Or yes. Yeah.
And like for how long though?
I guess. Well, okay. So the next fact is that it unfortunately was not uncommon for babies to die in the care of the farms due to neglect. I don't know if that was common knowledge among the women who were selling their babies, or I guess paying for someone to take care of their babies that they thought. From what I could tell from later aspects of this story, a lot of mothers would like write in, like try to kind of check in on the child. So
is this kind of like the foster system, pre-foster system?
Yeah. You know, if the and foster system like, was privately funded.
Yeah. And that they didn't get to actually go to homes.
Yeah.
They just stayed in some...
They just went to...
Semi-orphanage type thing, but, like, not an orphanage, so they couldn't...
Just some random lady who
collected. So, because, yeah, there's the kids that are in the foster system that it's, like, they're just in there mm-hmm. being fostered until their parents can take yeah. them.
I guess it's either until the parents
so
can take them back.
So you can never adopt them.
Maybe you could if the parent gave up rights.
Yeah, but... Yeah.
I don't know.
It depends on the situation.
That's anyway. The first sad part of this story. This is like the sad setting for the story.
1860s London is a sad setting.
This is true. So Amelia left nursing when she had her daughter. And then in 1869, George, her elderly husband, died.
Of being elderly.
Of being elderly in the 1860s. And so Amelia is suddenly...
I mean, when they met, he already had one foot in the grave.
Yeah, he's 59. Good grief. That's... Wow, I should have looked up what the mortality age was.
Yeah. Was she his first wife, or did he have a previous marriage?
I don't know. It didn't say. He's not really important in the
I know
story.
He's. I know he's not. He's a man. He doesn't matter. I'm kidding. No, it's just interesting that, you know, if he were a bachelor until he was almost 60 to all of a sudden get married.
They made it sound like, though, that they were, like, had this, like, kind of passionate, forbidden love mm-hmm. if they were, like, lying about their ages on a marriage certificate.
Torrid affair.
I know. So Amelia suddenly left with no income. So she remembers, oh yeah, I learned about baby farming. So she starts doing that, and
she becomes a farmer?
She becomes a farmer.
Okay.
She would require a lump sum of money.
Foster parent.
I'm gonna say no just, to not disparage the good name of many good foster parents out there. I know some good ones. Actually, I know a lot of good ones who have adopted the children.
That's what I want to do. I want to do the foster to adopt route because I want the kid to choose me back.
Stop. Katie, I told you I'm not taking any medication. I'm just going to cry. I literally just was overcome with a wave of emotion. My kid isn't going to choose me. Okay. So she would meet... So she required a lump sum of money up front instead of monthly payments. And when she would meet the mothers, she would just present herself as the sweet widow who, you know, just wanted a baby to care for and whatever. And side note, in 1872, she married William Dyer, which is how she became Amelia Dyer.
How old was this guy?
Didn't say. Don't care. I literally only put that in to explain why her last name is Dyer when she married an old guy named Thomas. So Amelia decides while she's doing this.
I thought maybe she just chose it to go with her profession of murder.
That would be a poor choice given that she is not good at, well, people really suspect her a lot. Like, people were on to her from the start. So she decides, she's doing this baby farming, and she's like, oh my gosh, it's taking so long for these babies to die of neglect. Like, ugh, you know how long you have to leave a baby alone before it dies? So she's like, I'm just going to go ahead and kill them and free up some space for more babies that people will give me money for.
Okay, so we're not just talking about murder here. We're talking about infanticide.
Yeah. So she's convincing mothers to pay her to take their child, and then she's killing the child.
Great. So these mothers are basically saying, here, have 50 pounds to kill my baby.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Which to Amelia, to Amelia sounded like the best plan for money ever. Like,
great scam.
Exactly. So in 1879...
But like, what happens when the kid dies? Like, does she have to alert the mother like, oh, sorry, he got sick and didn't make it?
I don't know.
No refunds.
I don't know if she ever tells the mothers, but she had to have the death certified. So,
and well, how does she not get like a terrible reputation as a baby farmer then? If her crops are dying all the time, then she's clearly not a very reputable farmer.
So in 1879, the doctor who she is calling out to certify all these deaths gets suspicious. He's like, God, I've been to Amelia Dyer's house a lot for some dead babies. Like, maybe I should report her. So he does.
Or maybe I should get in on the take.
Right? Oh, gosh. No, he was a decent person. So she gets investigated, and she gets charged with neglect. Mm-hmm. And she gets sentenced to...
probation.
6 months of hard labor. And this allegedly took a toll on her mental health.
Sure she didn't just have the typhus like her mom?
Well, I want to sort of tread lightly on this because there is a lot of speculation that she faked her mental illness or her mental hardships. So I don't want to present like we are doubting anyone who has mental health issues. Obviously, we both have mental health issues.
Look at the podcast we do.
Good grief. But there's a lot of speculation based on some things that we'll get into. So, she had already been abusing alcohol and, quote, opium-based products. Stop foreshadowing so well. I swear you have read your husband's text already, because that's what I texted him.
Can I say I'm psycho? I mean, psychic.
I swear I don't give Katie these notes ahead of time. She just guesses this stuff.
I really do. So I just read a lot and I know a lot of things. So when you say opium-based things and talking about drinking and addiction, I know about laudanum.
So she had frequent stays in mental hospitals, but as I said, the legitimacy of these stays was questioned because of the convenient timing of them. So, for example, in 1890, she took in the child of a governess, and the governess was one of the mothers who was genuinely wanting this child and just for whatever reason couldn't.
So this actually makes me understand a little bit better this program, because I know governess, like, basically they work full-time for a family for a while, and so, like, you know, she might be married. She might have, like, this might be her legitimate child.
Yeah.
Whatever. She probably wants this kid, but she's working full time taking care of another family's, or another family's kids. And, you know, like, in a few years, I'll have worked enough and saved up enough that, like, I can quit and
take my kid back.
Yeah.
So that was probably exactly her plan. And she went to visit her baby at one point, and she was looking at the baby, and she was like, this does not look like my baby. And she knew her baby had a birthmark on their hip. And so she, like, undressed the baby and found no birthmark and was like, the fuck is my baby? And so she probably reported Amelia, and authorities were already suspicious of Amelia. And so Amelia has a mental breakdown and gets committed to a hospital for a little bit.
Sanitarium.
Yes. So, people are like, these are really convenient times for you to have mental breaks.
Yeah, now that sounds like a Karen move.
Yes. Okay. So, I have to pull up my little text thread. So at one point...
Oh, we're getting into the conversation with my husband?
Yes, yes, yes. Nice. So, okay. I'm just going to read to you what this conversation went.
So I don't know if this ever got explained, but Hannah texted my husband yes. to ask him professional questions yes. regarding the story.
Because he is a pharmacist. And I told him at one point I would bring him into the podcast. Mm-hmm. So I texted him yesterday. I said, what do you know about laudanum? That's how you say it. He, by the way, he waited like 3 hours to text me back.
He was working 12 hours yesterday.
It was a pharmacy question. He said, only that it is superbly old school medicinal, quote, tonic / patent medicine. And then he wrote, equals the precursor to our burden of the opiate epidemic. And so I said, and drinking 2 bottles of it would kill a normal adult? He said, oh, I would bet so. It's basically all the morphine in a jar. And I said, cool, 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 thanks. So Amelia drinks 2 bottles of laudanum. And what was... So it may have been a serious suicide attempt, but...
It could just also be an addict looking for an escape.
But also...
Like a really stressed out addict.
Surprise! She had a super high tolerance for opium! So she drinks these 2 bottles and doesn't die. So it could either be an actual serious suicide attempt, which is a serious thing that we're not making light of, or she could have known, like in The Princess Bride, that her tolerance, she had built up this tolerance
to iocane powder.
And it would just look like she was trying to kill herself when really she was surviving.
Yeah, no, I can see now, like, your disclaimer at, like,
yes.
We don't want to question anyone. However, there is speculation.
Yes, there's speculation. And also, if we haven't figured this out, Amelia Dyer is a... I don't even want to call her a bitch, because I think that's an empowering word. She's a horrible monster.
Yeah. And I don't know, like... She's clearly sick in the head to be like,
yes,
I know a great money-making scheme. Mm-hmm. Killing babies.
But she's also killing babies. So...
Yeah, like, so clearly she's got some screws loose.
Yes, exactly.
To begin with. And, you know, she's got to be quite manipulative, too, to be able yes. to convince these mothers to be yeah. like, give me money and your baby. I promise I won't kill it.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
She's...
So that, like, she... Her actions mm-hmm. are the reason why her motives are being called into question.
Yes.
Not the actual events themselves.
Exactly.
So, like, people who would, like, if somebody else in the world drank 2 bottles of laudanum, be like, oh, yeah, that might probably suicide,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She probably needed some counseling. So...
She needed more than 6 months of hard labor.
For sure. So she realized, at this point...
Like all of the mothers who went through their hard labors to deliver their babies.
Oh, gosh.
Sorry. That was a stretch and wasn't that good.
No, it's fine. people are still listening.
It probably left a mark.
What?
Stretch mark.
Oh, gosh. Okay. I'm gonna take another drink for that one. Hold on.
It's the champagne. The bubbles have gone away.
It's the champagne plus the red wine.
It's the COVID vaccine. It's all the nano trackers and the vaccine go into my head.
Exactly. So Amelia realizes another mistake she's making, which is...
being alive.
She does not... She's like, why am I involving doctors in this? That's stupid. This doctor just got me in trouble. I'm going to stop... I'm just not going to report these deaths. So now she doesn't report the deaths, and she just disposes of the bodies herself. People get suspicious of her a lot, and so she just moves. Whenever, like, people are like, that lady in that creepy house on the corner, a lot of babies go in there. Never see them, really.
Never see children.
Never see any children.
See
and
babies,
then,
no toddlers.
Yeah, and then she just up and moves to another part of town.
Does she, continue with her method as just neglect, or
new.
As I figured she, because you mentioned something like, man, neglect is taking a long time.
Yeah.
And also there's a lot of crying involved, I'm sure.
Mm. I'm about to tell you about that in the form of a story. So January of 1896, a barmaid named Evelina Marmon, which I'm really liking the name Evelina.
It is pretty.
She gives birth to a little girl named Doris. And Evelina is not married, and so Doris is considered an illegitimate child. And so Evelina places an ad in the local paper looking for someone who could raise her daughter. And coincidentally, in the same paper, there was a listing for, quote, married couple with no family would adopt a healthy child, nice country home, terms, £10. And it was listed by a Mrs. Harding. And again, for reference.
So Miss Dyer is using aliases now. Also, I guess her husband is just going along with all of this?
Yeah, I think she divorces him or leaves him or something. I don't know.
He didn't leave her once he figured out what was going
good
on?
Grief. So for reference, £10 in 1896 is approximately £1,166 in 2021, which is approximately $1,600. So Evelina gets in touch with Mrs. Harding and asks to meet her. And they set up a time to meet. It is March 31st of 1896. And when Mrs. Harding gets there, which, if you haven't guessed, is Amelia, Evelina was a little surprised that she was older than she expected. And, like, not this, like, cheery, you know, wife of a farmer who lives out in the country.
Yeah. Why do you want to adopt a child?
Yeah, what?
Aren't you past your child days?
But Amelia is very manipulative, and she assures Evelina that her and her husband love children, and they just want a child, you know, the company of a child in the home and someone to love.
Whatever happened to her kid?
Oh, she's still there. I think she is now bringing her daughter with her to act as,
she's in on the con.
Yeah, to kind of be, like, the, look, like we're, yeah, like, we're, like, a happy, like, safe, innocent kind of mother
and daughter. We're a family.
Yeah, we're a family. So Evelina, tries to negotiate, to get monthly payments because that's more affordable for her, but Amelia insists £10 up front. And Evelina is really reluctant to give up Doris because she really wants to keep her. Mm-hmm. And she just, you know, this is her only option. So she hands over Doris the £10 and a cardboard box of clothes that she had for her. And she's so reluctant to give her up that she actually accompanies Amelia to the train station and on the first leg of her journey home. Presumably just... I mean, a mom who doesn't want
to... This is sad.
It's very, very sad. I will need another glass of wine soon. Her plan was to work, get on her feet, get stable, and then take Doris back. Amelia gets home with little Doris. She finds some white edging tape, which is basically bias tape for sewing, and wraps it around her neck and strangles her to death. This is a quote from her later. She said, "I used to like to watch them with the tape around their neck, but it was soon all over with them." She uses the money that she got from Evelina to pay her rent, and she gives her landlady a pair of child's boots that was in the box of clothing that Evelina had given her as a present for her landlady's daughter. The following day, Amelia takes in a 13-month-old little boy named Harry Simmons, but she had run out of edging tape.
And she's just not reusing it?
Well, apparently she liked to use a new piece each time, but this time she ran out, so she goes and gets Doris's body and takes the tape from around her neck and uses it to strangle Harry. And then she puts both of them in a carpet bag, puts some bricks in there and throws it into the Thames. So
the Thames is polluted with dead babies.
And a lot of other things.
Probably a lot of other dead bodies. Both human and not.
Also, probably a lot of poop.
Oh, yeah. Definitely a lot of poop. Probably mostly human, honestly.
I feel like I read something about the history of the Thames, and it was just, like, just basically a huge sewer.
Yeah.
For a long
Does
time.
Does anything live in there?
Well, actually,
the history of the sewer system is really interesting. Adam Ruins Everything does a really great bit on it.
Oh, great. Another bonus episode.
Maybe it will be.
Maybe it will be. Okay, so this is when the story starts to take a uptick, finally.
So when she gets caught.
Yes. So, unbeknownst to Amelia, 2 days prior to all of this, a bargeman had spotted a package floating in the Thames and pulled it out. Inside, he found the body of a baby girl who was later identified as Helena Fry. Helena is also a beautiful name.
Helena.
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 Okay, well, I know someone, and she pronounces it Helena, and I like it.
I like Helena.
Fine, you can have a Helena, I'll have a Helena.
Sounds great.
So, obviously, this guy calls the police, and they do some investigating, and they are able to make out a label on the box that this little Helena was found in. And on the label is a name and an address. Now, the name is for a Mrs. Thomas, which, if we remember...
Her first married name.
So, this plus the address leads them to Amelia. But, and of course, I'm sure at this point everyone's suspicious of her because she's a hella suspicious lady. Mm-hmm. So the police are like, all right, we need some more evidence to definitively connect her to this. So they basically set up like a sting operation where they have someone pose as a woman who wants to sell her baby. That gives them enough evidence or probable cause or whatever that on April 3rd, they raid her home. Finally.
Do they actually use the baby as bait? Like, does she... Even 5 seconds alone with this woman is dangerous. You can't use a baby as bait.
I think maybe they were just, it was like an initial meeting. Hey, I've got an interview. Yeah, let's talk. So they raid her home. They said her home just smelled so strongly of decomposition, even though there were no bodies actually in her home. They found white edging tape, which Amelia later would admit was her, like, signature. They found telegrams about adoption arrangements, pawn tickets for children's clothes, because if the mothers sent clothes, she would just, like, sell them. Receipts from ads.
So sad.
I know.
Mothers are, like, still caring for their babies. Like, I can't do much, but I can do this.
Yeah. So receipts from ads she had placed in the papers and also letters from mothers asking after their babies. So investigators learned that in the previous month she had taken in at least 20 babies. So that rate of murder works out to at least 20 a month times 12 months is 240 babies a year, and she's killing all of them.
And how many years was she active for?
So, I couldn't figure out how they got this math, because they said she was active for at least a decade, but their estimation was approximately 400 babies that they think she killed.
Total. Okay.
Probably more. On April 4th, 1896, Amelia was arrested and charged with murder.
Did she ever even remember or keep track of the number of babies?
I don't think so. The Thames was dredged, and 6 more bodies were discovered, including those of Doris and Harry. All of the bodies had the white edging tape around their necks, and that's when Amelia said, like, oh, that's how you'll know that those are mine. She was like, you'll probably find a bunch of bodies in the Thames, but the ones that are babies that look like they've been strangled, those were mine. Let's see. On May 22nd, 1896, she pleads guilty to the murder of Doris Marmon. She tried to get an insanity defense, but the prosecution convincingly pointed out that all the times she had been committed to institutions were also times she was close to getting caught. And it took a jury 4.5 minutes to come back with a guilty verdict.
And probably those 4 of those minutes were formalities that they probably
like
had to go
through. Walking out of the courtroom. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Well, they have to, you know, like go in there and like...
And close the door, and they're like,
all right, so now what we're going to do, here's the procedure, we're going to take a vote, we got to do it this way.
Is anyone voting not guilty?
All the formalities, this is how we do things.
Yeah.
Okay, let's vote. Do we need a discussion? No.
No. Okay, great. So Amelia Dyer was hanged, I said it right this time, on June 10th, 1896 at 9 a.m., and although she is suspected of killing over 400 children, only 3 of them were identified ever. And those were Doris Marmon, who was 4 months, Harry Simmons, who was 13 months, and Helena Fry, who was 12 months or younger. And that is the story of Amelia Dyer, the woman who killed 400 babies.
I
hate that story. Me too.
Yeah, I just, I can't fathom, like, I can't.
Yeah, I was telling my coworker about this, and she hunts, and she was like, I hate even like if you like hit a deer and it doesn't die and you have to go like finish it off. She's like, I hate that, and that's just putting an animal out of pain. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, I can't. Like, to kill a baby. Oh, gosh.
I feel so awful for, I mean, obviously all of the mothers who lost their child to this evil, heinous woman. But I feel so bad for the mothers who probably never even found out what happened. Because, like you said, she would, you know, the heat would start getting turned up on her.
And she would just move.
And she would move. And so, like, I'm sure this was a huge story, and, like, all over England and possibly the world, people were hearing about it. But, I mean, it's still possible that there were mothers who lost their children to this woman who never learned their fate.
Exactly. So, sorry, that one was really bad.
Yeah, more wine.
Yep.
More wine and cake.
Yep. This is a good episode to have wine and cake on.
Yeah, it really is.
So our final woman that I'm going to talk about today is Eva Dugan, and she is, I don't want to spoil the end, so I'm going to wait and tell you what she is. But this is her picture, her cute little mugshot.
She looks like a British granny. She looks like one of the guys from Monty Python when they're dressed as old biddies.
She kind of does. I just love the expressions she's making. She's like, I'm here.
You bastards caught me. Oh, well.
So, Eva was born in 1878 in Salisbury, Missouri.
Not British.
Not British. She actually moved during the Klondike Gold Rush of 1896 to 1899. Excuse me. She moved up to, I'm not even sure if I'm saying it right, Juneau?
Yeah. Juneau, Alaska.
Juneau, Alaska. Great.
It's the capital.
I didn't know it was spelled that way.
Juneau?
Yeah.
Hold on. Here's the joke. What's the capital of Alaska? Juneau? No, I'm asking you.
It's spelled French, so that's why I was confused, everyone. So while she was in Alaska, she worked as a cabaret singer.
Ooh.
Fun. And later she moves to Pima County, Arizona, and started working for a man named Andrew Mathis as his housekeeper. So, in 1927, Andrew fires Eva, and there was never a good reason or explanation given for why he fired her.
Yeah, maybe she just wasn't a good housekeeper.
Well, shortly after he fired her, Andrew goes missing.
Man, who could have seen that coming?
And Eva was a person of interest after she tries to sell some of his stuff. But then she also kind of disappears. But she disappears in, like, the we can kind of track you down, not in the She didn't disappear, like...
She's flying under the radar, yes. sort of.
She's not a missing person.
No.
So police are trying to locate her. And while they're investigating, they discover that she had been married 5 times. And that all 5 of her husbands had disappeared. And... Which I'm like... Did no one report them missing? Like... Okay. It makes me think of, I've been listening to a lot of Dixie Chicks lately, or The Chicks, and it makes me think of the song Earl Had to Die, because they said, turns out he was a missing person that nobody missed at all.
Or it's like, T-Swift's new song with Haim, what is it called?
I don't know.
It's off the new album.
Mine is a more classic reference.
Anyway, it's kind of like the modern day Earl Had to Die. you know, husband's cheating, wife confronts, wife goes missing.
Mm.
And it's, I think he did it, but I just can't prove it. And then all of a sudden his mistress moves in, and then he goes missing, and... They think, you know, there's a new life insurance policy that just came out, and I mean, I'm not going to spoil the whole song.
I was
going to
say, that also sounds like a Carrie Underwood song.
Taylor Swift totally married her best friend's husband who murdered her best friend.
Okay.
And then frames the mistress for it.
Hold on.
So, her friend,
Esty. Okay.
Her husband is cheating. Uh-huh. She confronts her husband.
Uh-huh.
She goes missing.
Right.
And...
Taylor Swift comes in.
And so the mistress moves into Esty's house,
uh-huh.
her bed, and then Esty's husband goes missing.
Okay.
And, you know, she's... Taylor Swift's got an alibi
Taylor
because...
Swift kills the husband.
Yes.
You said marries the husband. That's why I was confused.
When did I say marry?
I'm pretty sure you said marry. Play the tape back, Jerick, and confirm. I was confused. I was like, why would she marry her best friend's husband who killed her? That makes more sense.
Murders.
Also, like,
And then frames the mistress for it.
What's that Reba McEntire song? The Day the Lights Went Out in Georgia?
Don't know that one.
Okay. I've been listening to a lot of 90s country. Okay, so...
We can probably cut all of that out.
Whatever. So, police find and arrest Eva after she is caught trying to sell Andrew's old Dodge Coupe in Kansas City, Missouri. And she's held and charged with car theft. 9 months after her arrest, some random farmer... finds Andrew's decomposing body on his ranch. And...
Not a delightful surprise. So, we're going up to our property this weekend.
Uh-huh. Watch out for decomposing farmers.
Right, because, like, we're not there all the time. We've got a lot of land. So, like, we joke that it's the murder cabin. The little, shack that's there.
Just check it every time you go.
Yeah. Maybe
I'll... send the dogs first.
I'll take a picture, maybe you can post and be like, it kind of looks like a little murder cabin.
Oh, gosh.
That's why we're building an actual cabin.
Mm-hmm.
You'll come up there.
So, Eva is already in custody, so they just now charge her with murder. So, she goes on trial, and she testifies on her own behalf, and she reveals some very interesting components of the story. So, first she says... She had actually been sleeping with Andrew while she was working for him. Not only that, Andrew was acting as a pimp in that he was finding men in Tucson, bringing them back to the ranch, and having Eva sleep with them for money. She would charge...
And this was happening when she looked like she did in that picture you showed me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, she only charged $3... which is about $45. And Andrew, as any pimp does, took 16%, 16.5% really. And he would take 50 cents per, which is about $8. So for $8, so he has to go out and find men who want to sleep with Eva Who will pay her to sleep with them, and he only gets $8 per John. So Eva also says...
There's just so much ick in that situation, especially when you see the picture of her. Well, like, I don't want to, like, hate on other women, but, like, she is... Like, when you think prostitutes, she is not in, like, the prime age for prostitution.
Well, also, I think Andrew was... They described him as, like, an elderly, like, chicken farmer. So he was probably not a snack himself to be sleeping
with. Oh, I'm sure none of the Johns were.
Oh, no, no, no. So this is my other favorite part of the story. Eva says that Andrew one time accused her of trying to poison his breakfast. But actually what had happened was he had gotten sick from eating...
Rat poison that just happened to fall, like, just happened to fall into the cereal box.
No, no, no. I am presuming that he caught a rabbit or, like, shot a rabbit and was like, Eva, cook this rabbit for me. And she was like, this rabbit has boils on it. This is gross. And he's like, I don't care. Cook it. And so he ate this rabbit, and she was like, he ate rotten meat, and that's what made him sick.
He ate a diseased rabbit.
Yes, exactly. So also according to Eva, there was a teenage boy named Jack who worked on the ranch, and she says that Jack accidentally killed Andrew when he punched him because Andrew allegedly beat Jack for refusing to milk a cow.
So does this Jack person A exist?
I don't know. He doesn't.
Do they never like try to corroborate her story?
No. I think literally all they have is circumstantial evidence against her. So in her story, Jack tells her what happens. They both try to revive, they go and like find him. They both try to revive Andrew using mouth to mouth after removing his false teeth, of course.
And just get in the way, especially if they come loose, like yeah. They could start blocking his airway.
And imagine you're like trying to give a breath and you just hear like rattling. It's much easier to just clear out the mouth. So when that didn't work and they realized he's dead, they both put him in the back of the coop and then Jack drove him off to some location and dumped the body. So the prosecution, I guess just says, no, none of that's true. They somehow managed to convince a jury that Eva had killed Andrew with an axe. I don't know where that came from. I found her by looking up, like, different axe murderers.
So, I mean, they found his body, so, like, granted it was his decomposing body, but, like, if it was an axe murder, like, how much time had passed between his disappearance and the discovery of his body?
It was at least 9 months, but, so it was 9 months after she was arrested, and she was arrested only after they tracked her down after her disappearance. So it's probably like a year. Probably close to a year.
Okay. Well, I mean, still, if axes are unwieldy, they are, like, not graceful weapons. Mm-hmm. And you've got to put a lot of force, and they just kind of go. So even if you're just hacking at, like, the soft fleshy bits that are going to decompose first, you're still going to leave marks on some bones. Like, you're still going to hit some bones in there. So I feel like even if he is mostly decomposed, or, like, very well decomposed, there's still going to be some evidence. I mean, granted, this is, like, what year is this? Early 1900s forensics.
Yeah.
So...
Well, regardless, they only had circumstantial evidence against her. But that didn't stop a jury from finding her guilty and sentencing her to death by hanging. So while in jail, Amelia, they said that this was in order to purchase her own coffin. She sold embroidered handkerchiefs that she had knit herself to the public. And
embroidery and knitting are two different things.
I know, and I couldn't really understand that. Maybe she knits like a tea towel and puts like an embroidered piece on it.
Maybe.
I don't know. She also gave interviews to the press for $1 a piece, which is about $15 in today's money.
Well, she is an enterprising young woman.
She sure is.
Middle-aged woman. So maybe she was a prostitute.
She also made herself a beaded dress to wear for her execution because she wanted to look nice. But then at the last minute, she decided not to because she didn't want the nice, like, beads to get messed up in all the commotion. The day before her execution, her cell was searched and a bottle of ammonia and 3 razors were confiscated because there were rumors going around that she was going to kill herself before her execution. And then on February 21st, 1930, she was taken to the gallows. This was the first execution in Arizona history that allowed women to be witnesses.
Not the first execution of a woman.
No. Oh, wait. Actually, yes. In Arizona. I had to look. In Arizona.
So, this is the first execution of a woman in Arizona.
Yeah, and they were like, because it's a woman, I guess you women can be there.
Oh, wow. I guess it didn't impact their delicate sensibilities too much to see a woman get hanged.
Eva gets up there, and she told the guards, according to a newspaper report, she said, quote, "Don't hold my arms so tight. The people will think I'm afraid." I kind of love her. I'm not going to lie. I kind of love her.
She's a ballsy old broad.
I know. I just
I think broad is definitely like the broad term.
Yeah, there you go.
She's a broad.
So she refused any last words. And at 5:11, the trap was sprung. The snap of the rope was so forceful that it decapitated her, and her head just popped off.
So, like, full decapitation.
Yeah. It said it rolled, like, to a stop in front of, like, spectators.
What an execution. To first allow women there.
Wait, hold on.
The first execution of the woman in that state. And it goes so horribly wrong.
Yes.
They're like, maybe we shouldn't put women.
And the women were like, is this what hangings are like? Think of the women who were probably like, okay, that's supposed to happen. Like, what if you're just like, yeah, all right. Like,
wait, hold on. Last time Charles went to one of these things, he didn't tell me about this.
He didn't mention that part, but I guess this is how it works.
Meanwhile, all the officials are like, oh, shit. She was a witch. That's what that means.
So 5 of the witnesses fainted. Yeah. Only 2 of them were women. So 2 women, 3 men.
The whole, like, women fainting thing just makes no sense to me.
I might faint if I saw a woman's head pop off during a hanging, but only out of, like, fear. Not out of, like, in a swooning way. I think the adrenaline would, or, like, I don't know, something would just rush to my head and
I think the vast majority of women fainting over, oh, no, was an act.
Does blacking out while drunk count as fainting?
No.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I've done that a couple times. Gracefully?
That's something different.
Okay, well, whatever. I did it in front of my now husband, and he still married me, so. One day I'll, listen, if you want to become a huge Patreon donor and donate, like, $25, $35 a month, I will share with you that picture, because it's a classic. Shortly after Eva's hanging, Arizona stopped hanging people, and Eva Dugan was the only woman ever executed by hanging in the state of Arizona, and I put as her, like, title, first woman hanged and decapitated in Arizona.
First and last woman
first
hanged.
First and last hanged and decapitated. Probably the only woman who was ever decapitated by hanging, at least in Arizona, for sure.
Well, I mean, she was the only woman hanged in Arizona, so yes.
Probably she would be the only, like, the southwestern United States.
I don't know. That's actually a statistic I want to look up now, is how many women have been hanged and decapitated as part of their hanging.
Oh,
or really just how many people have been decapitated from their hanging. Because, like, I hear more often the tales that, I heard it when I said it too. There was the executioner, mm-hmm. but there was another person down below the gallows that if when the trapdoor dropped and it didn't break their neck, there was somebody that would hang on to their feet and, like, weigh them down to, you know.
Oh, gosh.
Because otherwise they're just hanging there, slowly strangling being asphyxiated.
Which you only want sometimes for the really bad
criminals.
There, what did we do one where some guy, I cannot think back to any of our episodes right now. I swear we did one where the murderer, hung and it didn't break his neck and he spent like 7 minutes asphyxiating because we were like, good.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Seems like an Albert Fish kind of ending.
How did Albert Fish die? How was he killed?
I don't really want to listen to that one.
Already though. I know. I'll just look at the notes for it. Anyways.
So that was fun for Women's History Month.
Yes. Also, if you've gotten all the way to the end, I just want to give a shout out to our, I'm not going to say our favorite listener, one of our biggest, one of our most supportive listeners, Emerald. That's what I'm calling them now because I don't know their real name. They messaged us the other night and they were like, I'm listening to the last week's episode. And they were like, I'm not 5 minutes in and I'm already screaming, New Mexico, not North Mexico. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I don't know why it was so hard for me.
And the fact that you did it twice.
I did it twice. But they only know about the first time or the second time. I don't know. They were really familiar with that case. And with, they said they think there are a lot of the bodies are in that lake. And that they're just never, it's so big that they're just never gonna.
Is Emerald from North Mexico? I mean, New Mexico?
I think they live somewhere near there. They
didn't. Okay.
Yeah. But I was like, I'm glad you knew about that case because I'd never heard of it before. But yeah. Thank you, Emerald, for being, oh my gosh, like, you make me believe in this podcast, honestly.
Oh, yeah. No, I love, you know, because I get all the notifications, and yeah. I'll see, you know, when so-and-so sent us a message, so-and-so sent us a message, but whenever I see Emerald, I'm like, hey, Emerald. Yeah. Like, I don't ever go look at the messages. I don't know what's being said.
It would be confusing. Every now and then, I'll get a notification while I'm at work, and I'll make a mental note, like, when I'm on lunch or when I get home, like, check the Instagram messages and reply to it. And the message won't make any sense. And I'll have to scroll back and realize that Jarek's been having a conversation with someone.
That's why I stay out of it.
Yeah. Stay out of things. Gosh, Katie. Okay. So, anyways, happy 1 year anniversary.
Yeah, it's been a wild night.
It's been wild. Jarek
there was his cake.
There still is cake.
Yeah. It's been properly decimated, though.
Jarek has his work cut out for him. I will say the link to our Patreon will be on our Instagram.
And our website.
And
when is that live? Is it live?
It's live today. Yes. And yeah, so thanks for sticking around, either sticking around for 52 episodes or for just joining us now. Thank you. I still can't believe we have actual listeners. I remember when we had our...
We love hearing from you. We can't stress it enough.
I know. Do you remember when we had our 100, was it 100 downloads that we celebrated virtually?
Yeah.
Because we were in lockdown?
Yep.
I can't believe we're here. This is just
the best. Was it 100 or was it 1,000?
I don't know. We made a big deal when we got to 100. Maybe I just made a post about it. I feel like it was, I don't know. We'll look it up.
I keep looking at the whiteboard because we used to keep track of the downloads.
This is true. But yeah.
But milestones are important.
They are. Which is why we're having cake. What's our Instagram, Katie, that we never mentioned?
We are The Tales We Tell Podcast on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Our website is thetaleswetellpodcast.com.
Yep.
And we've also got the Redbubble store. Like, if you don't want to do Patreon and become a member or figure out how to do a one-time donation, you can always buy some stuff that you don't need.
Yep.
And that is our Redbubble store. Search The Tales We Tell. couple different art prints.
Yep.
And you can get it on pretty much anything, and that also helps us out some, too.
There's also an option with Patreon, which I think I'm going to set up. It's if you are, like, a super patron, and it's like a $35 a month level, which is the only reason I didn't set it up now, because I'm like, I feel so bad even asking for 10. But they do a merch kind of reward thing. So if you donate $35 a month for a year, over the year, you get 3 different pieces of merch with, like, our logo on it. So you'd get, like, a mug, a tote bag, a sweatshirt, like, no, you get 4. Sorry. I couldn't. Quarters. Once a quarter. And I think I'm going to set that up. Just not because I'm asking anyone to give us $35 a month, but I think it's cool. And yeah, if you have any of our merch, we're going to post this tomorrow anyways. If you have bought merch, post a picture of it, and tag us on Instagram. And we're doing we're trying to collect pictures of that as a way to show support for us. okay, I'm going to shut up so we can finish this bottle.
This past year has been a wild ride of Tiger King, pandemic,
that's all
election.
Oh, yeah. We ended on a good note.
We had, like, 3 years' worth of stuff in the last year.
We did.
And all through all of that, we managed to put out a semi-decent quality podcast every week.
I can't believe we did it every week. Listen, if you guys knew how many times I have stressed out over this, it's a lot.
I mean, with the exception of, I think maybe Christmas, we didn't put anything out. And then
we put out, like, a bonus episode.
Yeah, and then Thanksgiving, we put out a bonus episode. Yeah. Every holiday, we didn't take any time off.
We didn't. And we need some.
Yeah, but not yet.
Not yet. We're working on it. So, thank you guys.
Thanks so much for listening for the past year, 6 months, 3 months,
1 day,
1 hour.
Please come back and listen again next week, because we'll be here.